and welcome to the latest episode of the Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. I'm producer Vic, and I'll be presenting this month's podcast because amidst all the madness, it's been really difficult to get us all in the same room at the same time. But we're totally committed to bringing you our monthly podcast by hook or by crook. So in this episode, we're exploring the barriers and challenges faced by women when it comes to employment and how we can all work together to tap into all that unlocked potential out there. This episode was recorded live in Manchester, where we're delivering our latest programme called Time to Grow.
Today is all about you and all about what you want to get from yourself, your ideas and where you want to go next. Hopefully we'll have another fantastic day, I don't doubt that.
And I was there on day two, recording some interviews with the participants and organisers. Hi, you're joining us here today in Manchester on day two of our Power to Change programme, where we're working with over 30 unemployed women from loads of different backgrounds. They're all looking for work and they're all facing different barriers to getting a job. I'm off to grab some of the people behind this project to find out more about why it's time to change the way we support women who are out of work.
Hi, I'm Jane McGrath, co-founder of Flourish CIC.
I'm Simone Callaghan and I'm founder of CIC, the Goodness Collective.
So we're here today on day two of the Time to Grow programme. How are you involved, Simone? What are you doing on the programme?
So I'm supporting the programme from a careers perspective. So I'll be working with some of the women to explore where they're at, think about what they've done in the past, start to kind of uncover some of their passions and just explore what's out there in terms of all the opportunities. We get very stuck into the full-time job situation that we know is out there. But actually what we want to be doing is thinking about, you know, there are social enterprises, which the programme is a big part of promoting. There are opportunities part-time, there are opportunities for volunteering, it might be going back to learning, it might be further training. So it's kind of to explore the whole landscape of what is out there. So I'll be doing some of that with the women.
Tell me why Flourish has designed this programme.
It's just in response to a gap, I guess, in terms of programmes for women. They tend to be more focused on the profitability and growth of businesses. And what we really want to do is focus on the person themselves and unlock potential. And then if through that process, hopefully there comes a sustainable business model and that brings about a profit to enable financial independence for those women. So we just come at it at a different angle, I guess. We also recognise that it's business startup isn't for everyone. So that's really why we put in a career pathway element to this programme, to enable women to explore jobs that work for them, work around their needs and wants and desires, but also enable them to do other things, you know, carry the mental load and be carers and et cetera. So we really wanted that two work streams to look at that. So I'm kind of focusing more on the kind of enterprise side of things, seeing working with the women who've got ideas for self-employment, where Simone is obviously going down the career pathway route, which is great. So it gives people choice.
Have you seen any or recognised any barriers that are currently facing women who are out of work?
Yeah, I think even just recruiting for these types of programs, it becomes obvious that there is a lot of vulnerability in a lot of women. They're frightened about coming onto things because they're not sure what that commitment looks like. Does it fit in with their lifestyles? A lot of women have personal caring things going on at home. Some women have had mental health issues. There's a lot of lack of confidence there. So even just the recruitment of speaking to them and checking it's the right thing for them is uncovering kind of lots of barriers. And a bit of hidden unemployment as well, we're finding, because actually there are a lot of women who are not claiming benefits because they have partners who work or they need to claim an ESA, but their mental health condition prevents them because it's too stressful. So it's a bit of a catch-22. Even accessing this programme, the evidence that's required to get some funding in place for them to be able to come on things like this means that they have to show evidence of benefits. And for every woman, that isn't always possible. So even just in accessing our programmes, it's becoming apparent there are gaps.
I've never heard of hidden unemployment before. I've heard of underemployment. Is that something that you're exploring in this programme as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We're exploring underemployment and hidden employment. And again, it's there are barriers to employment per se, but there's also perceived barriers. Some of the women probably haven't explored entering a career in the social enterprise or charitable sector, and actually there can be quite natural, like, good workplaces for them to thrive and flourish, because they do provide flexibility, they do care for workers, they do pay the living wage and various things. So what we're also trying to do in part of this programme is to highlight the good employers out there in our sector that can actually help these women to come back part-time, maybe, you know, work flexibly.
Is it a one-size-fits-all approach?
No, there isn't, because it actually it is about finding out the interests of these women, what is it they want to explore more of, what do they know nothing about yet, and it's creating opportunities for them to see a bit of that live and personalising the programme to their needs. And also, if it isn't right for them, not just getting a bum on a seat, talking to them, being able to offer them and signpost them, both Flourish and the Goodness Collective across Manchester, Salford, Stockport, lots of the GM areas, we have lots of contacts. So it's kind of, if it isn't right for them, well, what else is out there, and being able to signpost them to that. So I don't think there's one size fits all for any women, and even the women who are on this programme will still need very different things.
What are some of those differences that you've seen, Jo?
You know, we've got three Arabic speaking women, two from Syria, who are highly educated, but yet they haven't got the networks within our community to grasp opportunities and connect into those opportunities and to articulate their value and things like that. So that's one difference. And we've got people that maybe haven't had that opportunity of education, but have got so much lived experience of issues and challenges that they've bring so much value to their community. So it's really hard to kind of find a programme that hits all of those. But what we've tried to do is have a good mix of kind of group work and peer-to-peer support, but also that one-to-one coaching and mentoring side of things as well, to give those people an opportunity to have their voice heard.
What I've found, I've been a careers advisor for quite a long time now. I won't even say how long, give my age away. But I think from the past, from 10 years ago, the difference in the programmes that are popping up to support people, it used to be the carousel of go and write a CV, do some job applications, a bit of mock interview training. I think that's changing, because we're realising actually that just going from one unemployment programme to another isn't having any impact, and it isn't supporting these people into employment. So we have to think differently about what that should look like.
How exciting is that, though, that there's so much untapped potential that could enrich workforces, or, you know, start new businesses. And it's really exciting that Flourish is kickstarting this programme. Do you have any advice for employers who are looking to try and get some of this untapped potential?
I think, A, it's really good that WEA has got this ESF fund that allows us to take a community approach to this work. I think that is brilliant. We can't do this work without the employers being at the other end, ready to take on these women. If you want a motivated, committed, hardworking woman in your organisation, then this is the place to come to get them, because from what I've seen over the last couple of days, they're phenomenal. They're amazing. I'd love them all to work for me, and we'd just change the world.
Yeah, and I think that's it. And we're having conversations with local businesses all the time about what they can do differently. And it isn't just about them ticking a box. It is actually, this is really mutually beneficial to them. They can get so much from the women that we're bringing through these programmes. If they themselves are a bit more flexible about what they'll offer and about hours and about workplace and a bit more understanding, and they build that into their own recruitment practices, there is so much untapped potential.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with Simone. And part of the programme that we're running is that we've included some work placement opportunities. So we are actually working with employers to bring some of these women in and spend some time with them. However, we've only really approached the community in which that we kind of do business in, which is social enterprise and charitable organisations. But I do think that a further conversation would be, if we were to do this programme again, would be to open up that employment pool a bit more and work with other organisations and see if there's something we can do with them, and not necessarily in that social enterprise world that are maybe private sector organisations that are looking to have a more diverse workforce, have committed, motivated people working for them.
The world of work is changing and families are changing, humans are changing and work environments need to adapt. I'm quite chuffed that you guys are helping to provide a pipeline of talent into that new way of working.
It's really important for us to focus on the talent locally and find local opportunities and to be able to be a part of that and meet, as Jo said, these women are awesome.
Just thinking back to your own experiences now, has the design and the involvement of this programme come from any personal experiences that you've had returning to work?
Absolutely. I've got, from personal experience, I watched my mum, a really talented, clever, engaged, personable woman, give up a career because she had long-term caring responsibilities for her son. My brother has got autism and he still lives at home with him now. And, you know, that's so sad to say that she couldn't work alongside caring for him. That really started me off on this. And then for myself, I guess, I just didn't like working in organisations where the culture wasn't right. It just felt wrong. I just couldn't, it didn't sit right with me. So that affected my mental health because I just couldn't see myself working within an organisation that didn't chime to my values. So I ended up setting up on my own nearly 10 years ago, set up enterprise stuff. And through that, it's allowed me that flexibility. It's allowed me to do meaningful work. It's not easy, but at least it's given me the opportunity to help and support people beyond my business. So that's been helpful. And now I've got a little boy, he's 4, and, you know, it does give me that flexibility around, you know, having some time to take him to school and pick him up and things that are important for his development and allow me to work as well. And it, I think, you know, sends out a good message to him as a role model to him that you can do things yourself and you can have a bit of an impact on the world while you're here.
That's nice. You're not only helping yourself by having this flexible approach to work, you're also helping the people that you serve on, for a better word, aren't you? So, oh, the Times Change Women programme people have come out and are doing some exercises in the corridor here. So we're going to, before it gets rowdy, we're going to say bye-bye to you too. But thank you very much for sharing your stories and why we're here today.
Thank you.
As I mentioned in the interview, the prospect of all this untapped talent out there is so exciting. Imagine the wealth of skills, experience and personalities that could be injecting life into your business or indeed a brand new business. We simply need more organisations like Flourish to help unlock this incredible potential. Now I'm going to flip it over to you. What part can you play in doing something about it? So we've heard from the perceived barriers to employment. Now let's hear from the horse's mouth. I'm joined by two women who are both looking for work, but who are at very different places on their journey to employment.
I'm Dee, I'm from Chorlton and I don't work at the moment, I just enjoy myself.
Can I ask a question that you're not supposed to ask? How old are you?
68.
Wow, can you believe that? Good genes, very good genes. And yourself?
Hi, I'm Patricia and I'm 20 and I'm from Coventry. And I'm currently doing an internship program with WeMind the Gap. WeMind the Gap, it's a program that helps young women from 16 to 25 to give them access to employment through different internships across different industries.
How long have you been out of work for?
I've been out of work for 3 months prior to the WeMind the Gap. It's been a really bad challenge because like I just came out of uni, I didn't know what to do with my degree because it was so broad. I just faced loads of struggles.
And so what did you do at university?
So I studied sociology with quantitative data. So came out of uni, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I always had a passion to just help people. So I was like, you know what, let me just give it a go and WeMind the Gap since it's just...
And what's been your perception of the world of work so far?
It's really different to what we actually get told of. For example, during our careers, our studies, when you get like the real world is actually scary. Like I remember when I was at uni, they were most emphasizing on actually getting a degree, getting a good grade. But when you come out, it's actually more about the experience that you get. Yeah, the more experience you get, the more your chances actually to get in. And also it's also about the connection, the people you know within that industry is actually what is going to get you to the top.
So during university, were you actively building your networks and connections, or were you just focused on getting that degree?
I was mainly focusing on getting the degree and also doing extra stuff, for example, extra curriculum, such as singing, getting involved with societies, but not actually getting experience into the field that I wanted to, because I literally came out with didn't know what to do. So yeah, it's just after that I came out, I was like, okay, I need to sort myself out.
What degree did you get?
I got T1. So yeah, that's, I would say, basic. Yeah. I was a bit disappointed because I was like, I worked so hard and I was like, I want to get it first. But for, let's say, many employing, that's kind of like average grade.
So you left university with a few bit of extracurricular things under your belt, a 2-1. It's a good degree. I know, isn't it? But you just felt a little bit lost, is that right?
I feel like they didn't get enough support. I feel like they didn't tell us how actually the real world is actually going to be. They just thought, oh, do this, learn this, and hopefully by the time you finish, you get something. I think one of the things that university needs to actually teach the student is actually how to apply the knowledge in the world of like work.
And if the university had those sort of sessions or extracurricular employability sessions, would you have attended?
Oh, definitely.
T, moving on to yourself, and you're coming from a completely different world. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the struggles in terms of confidence and connections might still ring true. There might be some commonalities. So what's made you return and want to return to work?
Just feeling that I'm not finished yet.
Tell me a little bit about the journey then. So the D journey so far.
Yeah, I worked in education mostly. I did a little bit in industry to start with, all in third sector. My last role was a strategic managerial role. And when I left that, I could have done consultancy, but that wasn't really what I wanted to do at the time. So I went into a secondary school doing the data. So I went right back to a completely operational role. And I did that for about 7 years. That's why I would say I've lost some professional confidence, because when you're in a strategic role, it's very different from operational. And I found it quite hard sometimes too, because I could see what I would do if I was in the strategic position, but that wasn't my place in the organisation. So you had to, you know, recognise that and keep a lid on things. I suppose that's partly where, I wouldn't call it frustration, but an awareness that I've got more to offer.
Have you been looking for work?
I did apply for a job probably about 18 months ago. I stopped working 2 years ago. I did apply for a job quite early on in the game, but I think my age is a barrier, and I think I was a bit put off because I did a really good interview and I should have got the job, but I got some kind of a fobbing off story, and I don't know whether that was to do with me, my age or whatever, or whether there was some other reason for it. That made me feel I don't really want to go through all this again, and also I don't actually want to lose much of my freedom. And if I did go back into, say, a school job, I'm back to term time, holidays, and I just want to be a lot freer than that. Now I've tasted it, I'm not going back into term time working ever again. I don't want to teach. So I'm looking for something, but on my own terms, really.
What does that dream position look like? What is it?
Well, that's quite interesting, because I don't think I can work in where I'd say my real passion lies, which is, I can and I can't. It's around violence against women. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to work directly in that field. I do indirect work around it through my political activity, the Women's Equality Party. But I'd like to, I have came into this with the idea of doing systems and data analysis for small businesses and charities. And I was particularly interested in perhaps targeting charities and businesses that were supporting women, particularly women coming out of domestic abuse. But on the visit to Sharp, it was really interesting. Just being in that building, it brought back to me a prototype I built about 9 years ago when I was first in the secondary schools. and it was on literacy for numeracy. And I devised this thing that would explain mathematical concepts in very plain English that could be read to the person and could be read in other languages. So it hit poor readers, it hit people with EFL, and it would hit dyslexics because it was very visual, and young people with autism conditions as well would probably respond quite well to it. And I tried it out in two schools, and though they liked it, they wouldn't put any money into developing it. But when I was in that building, I just thought, oh God, somebody here could make that come true. So I'm a bit conflicted now about, yeah, I've got options now that I didn't kind of come in thinking I had.
How great is that, though, that just after 2 days on the programme, you're going from thinking, I've been rejected 18 months ago, to I've got a few options?
Yeah. It's amazing, really, yeah. And I just like the whole... I was kind of wondering why I'd been put on the short visit, because there was a different one that was education, and I thought that might have perhaps been a more natural... But being there, I thought, oh, I know why I'm here. It's a great environment.
What other help do you need, then, to help you support you?
Well, I suppose... I've lost my contacts that I had. One of my skills is networking, and I had a fantastic network of contacts when I was in the FE sector. And when I moved into the secondary school in the operational role, one of the disappointments to me about that job is you basically don't have any networking opportunities. I think what I need to do is build my network, and I felt this course would be a great place to start from.
Definitely, I think, like, the more, as I said before, like, networking is, like, makes you, puts you at a great advantage. Seriously, the more people you know in the industry, yeah, the more I think you're going to get there. That's not something I always get told.
Have you changed what you want to do now?
Yeah, kind of. I was, like, actually more interested in doing education studies when I first finished, but now I want to actually go into HR.
And do you think you can be?
Oh, yeah, definitely. As long as I put my mind into it, like, I'll go for it.
Finally, I just want to ask you both a question. At Flourish, we've noticed that there's lots of women out there with untapped potential. You both nodding at me like, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on that?
I would say this, it's society. It's the role of women in society, that women aren't encouraged to think of themselves positively in the way that men are. They don't appreciate the talents they've got, and there aren't the opportunities for them to use them. And I think it's good if they get into situations with other women, where other women will support them and recognise their talents. That starts to build their confidence and self-esteem. So then it's important for them to have opportunities to keep on building that self-esteem. That to me is the fundamental sort of skill that people need to have, is the ability to build their own self-esteem and maintain it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Dee said. I feel like because we live in a patriarchal society, I think also we women, we need to support each other, strengthen each other, because even though we might get there, there'll be so many barriers, like, because obviously we can see the glass ceiling, like, we can see the top, but we won't be able to get there until we get the support from each other. We support each other.
Do women have it harder in employment, in careers, do you think?
Definitely, definitely.
Well, there's the old boy network. I mean, to progress in the corporate world, you have to be part of the out-of-hours stuff as well as the in-hours stuff. And I think these are the issues that, you know, it's still very much man-led and exclusive.
You're going to be heading, you want to head into quite a female-dominated area, which is HR. The tech is getting more female. Well, there's lots of amazing women in tech, but there is still that
not enough.
Does that scare you a little bit? Or?
Well, no, I think actually I've been, you know, looking at in artificial intelligence, and it quite scares me that it's so male-led and so male in the way it's presented, like not recognising women's voices, not recognising, you know, voices from BME people. And it's a little thing, but it's a hugely important thing. And so, in a way, getting back in there is exciting to me because that would put me in a place to challenge that sort of thing.
So how, a big question, the big question, how might society better support women to sort of tap into that unlocked potential? What can we do to make it easier for us, I'm trying to say?
Free childcare for every child from the age of 9 months to school leaving age, women's quality party policy, which then it allows that plus having paternity leave of the same length for men. It puts men in the role of caregiver, which many men want and don't have the opportunity at the moment, younger men. And it would allow then more equal parenting. And then, you know, women would have more opportunity to be in the workplace, showing their skills and have a more even chance of competing in the workplace. So that's pay women properly as well.
I agree with you as well. So definitely equal opportunities, like have the same opportunities as men have.
Yeah. And we do need to see more representative leadership, not just of women, but of all, you know, BME as well. It's too male, too white, too middle-aged. And that's coming from an older person who is white.
I'm going to wish you the best of luck on the rest of your journey with Flourish. Okay. Even on, I can't believe the journey you've had so far. You were like halfway through day two. It's amazing. So I can't wait to see you at the end of this programme. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And finally, we hear from Karen, another one of our Time to Grow participants, who's facing yet another barrier when it comes to employment. And this one's all about motherhood and family.
I'm Karen. I'm from Warrington, born and bred. And I've recently, in the last 12 months, trained as a children's yoga teacher. And from there, set up my Yoga Buds business. So I'm in the process of developing that and expanding.
You're on the Time to Change programme today. So why have you decided to enrol on this programme?
You lose your confidence. I worked full time in my 20s and 30s and that was fabulous. I enjoyed it and then had children and decided to go part time, which then I found a struggle because I felt the weight of guilt when I was at work because I'd left the children with carers, minders, whoever. And then when I was at home with the children, I was happy and loved it. But then I felt the guilt that I wasn't giving the job enough of my attention. So it was this finding a balance, really. And eventually, through the support of my husband, I was lucky enough to be able to leave the job completely. I was sad. It took me 18 months to make the decision to leave because I've always earned money and worked.
What was the job?
I worked in sales and marketing for a company in Stockport. Great, I loved it, really enjoyed every minute of it. But it was the needing to be there for my children part that pulled me away, and the travelling to and from was just taking up hours of my day. Yeah, eventually that decision was reached, and then it was like stay-at-home mum. And that was, of course, a great novelty at first. And I absolutely got stuck into that baking and all the type of things you do, art with the kids, and still love all that now. But I realised they're getting older. They're not going to need me as much. And I started to assess a couple of years back. My daughter would have been 7. What do I want? What am I going to start to want and need as they grow up and leave? And that's when I started asking questions. And then a few friends have said to me over the years, well, you love your yoga. You've done yoga for sort of 30 years. You'd be great teaching children. I love volunteering at the school. I run ukulele club at the school and things like that. All primary kids, so under the age of 11. That's when I looked into it and found a course in Manchester with Chrysalis kids and trained up with them. And then from there, started to think about setting up my business. Now, I've never set up a business before, so I really did not know what to do. Even down to having a Facebook page was a huge, you know, shock and journey for me. I'm slightly held back with fear. So coming on this course today, Time to Grow with Flourish, I'm hoping, and it has already started to show me the things I'm creating as barriers, helping me to try to work around them, remove them, and reduce the fear I feel over charging forward. And I'm meeting a lot of ladies who are in a similar position to me, that they've children to consider, husbands to consider, homes to think about running, and you've got all these other things to juggle and balance. And it's, you know, where to direct your energy, whether you've enough energy. So it's helping immensely. There's some very inspiring women today. And some have had us practically in tears with laughter. Some have had us in tears of sadness and emotion. But it's been wonderful so far.
And so that journey of leaving full-time work and becoming a full-time mom, and then thinking about the kids growing up and managing a house, managing a husband, do you think that men would have had a problem with any of that?
Not at all. My husband's wonderful. He's very supportive. He also, whenever the children, it's all very well saying, go for it, create your own business. But as soon as things happen with the kids, whereby perhaps I have to go and collect them from school, they're not well, they're going to be off a day, 2 days, a week, however long it is, immediately everything in my life is cancelled. I've had times where I've had to cancel schools because obviously I teach, I'm setting up my teaching, and I go into breakfast clubs or after school clubs or even wellness days in schools, and I've had to just ring and say, I am so sorry, I cannot come in, my kids need me. And I've always been able to, through the yoga network, you can always find someone to stand in, so you don't have to let anybody down except yourself, really, and you can't go through with the contract with the school. Yeah, men don't have that to consider at all. It's just, he's the main breadwinner. It is a given. He goes out in the morning and doesn't have to think about anything, but that goes with the territory, I suppose, of being the mum. I've always felt that was my number one priority job, is to be the mum and be the best mum you can. But obviously, when being the best mum you can sometimes lose sight of who you are. And it's, you know, it's your life, isn't it? What's in it for you? These events really help you to focus on the what is in it for you part. And the what is in it for you could be, it sounds selfish, but it might be that you want to actually give to the community and create something that's for other people. And that alone, it helps you to feel fulfilled.
It's all about you, isn't it, now?
Yeah, it's about me, but about me being able to give more of myself to... I'm quite passionate about the yoga for children and mindfulness for children. And somebody asked me today, what age group is that? Is it high school? And I said, no, it's not. It's up, I teach primary school children. I said, but by starting there, I hope I am helping them to start to think about themselves and how to self-care for their bodies, their physical bodies, and also how to think about their mental health, and to start taking notice of that and to consider how they feel and how they can alter that if it's, you know, if they're not in the right place at the time.
How long was that gap between being full-time mum and then starting the business?
3 to 4 years ago, I finished.
Were there any surprising bits about from becoming a full-time mum to starting the business again that you forgot how to do?
Oh yeah, be confident and believe in yourself. Yeah, well, it felt easy for me to become, I was this full-time mum and very active in our village where we live, community wise sort of involved with all sorts of things, PTFA and local activities, organizing things, being the main organizer and or being part of with other people, other women from the schools and local community. But then when it came to focusing on something for myself, I felt very, very small again and very lacked confidence and didn't feel I could speak out. And it's taken years actually coming to one of these events highlights that fear I still have, where they go around the room and say, come on now, it's time to introduce yourself. And I suddenly think, oh, I don't like this part. I really don't want to, I want to go to the toilet now. But you have to force yourself into these situations and eventually overcome them.
So final question, what do you think you can achieve with this extra confidence that you're going to get injected with?
Well, do you know something? I've spoke to so many people on the course that they've given me ideas about all sorts of things. I've always had this, for the last few years, me and my daughter are very passionate. It's all in the news all the time now, the recycling and reusing, and it's something we're very keen on. And so I've recently looked into how can I, in our home, reduce the amount of packages and bottles and things we use and waste. Coming along today, there's a lot of girls that have talked about, and ladies talking about recycling and things I'm passionate about. And so it opens up all the doors, I suppose. There's lots of inspiration flying around in the room.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Vicky. I hope you have enjoyed that. I have. I really.
Now we've only given you 3 different examples of the barriers faced by women when it comes to earning a living. There are thousands more. And as we said at the beginning, not one size fits all. And that's why we've designed our Time to Grow programme. You can find out more on our website at flourishtogether.org.uk. That's it for this month's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. Thanks to Karen, Patricia and Dee. And we'll be sure to keep you posted as to how they get on our Time to Grow programme. Now, we'd love to hear your employment stories, from your barriers to your successes. Connect with us on Twitter at FlourishCIC. Now, if you're loving what you're hearing and you are listening on Apple Podcasts, hit that review button and give us a review. Lots of reviews and good ratings take us higher up the Apple Podcast charts, and that means that more people can hear all the incredible advice that we're sharing with you on this podcast. Or if you're listening elsewhere, do share your thoughts and love on social media and tag us in. Now, here's a special message from Nicola about how Flourish and our partners are adapting their events and programmes to keep supporting the women changemakers and the social enterprise sector in light of the coronavirus outbreak.
Here at Flourish, we're looking forward, in spite of the challenges, to adapting our current programmes and making sure we can support as many people as possible, especially during this difficult time. The coronavirus is presenting us all with barriers that we need to overcome, so we're trying to tackle this by doing some of the following. We're increasing the number of podcasts that we're producing on a range of themes that are current now. We are going to be taking our Time to Grow and Resilient Leaders programmes online, and that means having action learning groups and discussions via Zoom with our participants. And we're also going to be running our events as virtual workshops. Some of those will have listen again options, so look out for those. In fact, our next event is being run as a Twitter chat. We're going to be running that on the 24th of April at 10 o'clock, and it's called Twitter, Why Bother? We've got myself sharing knowledge and information on, you know, what's the point and how have we gone about this at Flourish. Michaela Parnell at HS Action Together is be talking about her experience through using Facebook groups and through using Twitter chats. Dr. Mary McGee Wood from the University of Manchester will be talking a bit more about analytics. And Jolene Sheehan from Joy Ethic, who has recently started using Twitter, will be giving it some tips and ideas from a newbie's point of view. She's used some great graphics and GIFs and things, so we'll try and talk about all of that. So hopefully we will stay connected, keep listening to our podcasts, and we'll see you at our event on the 24th of April online. All you need to do is look at FlourishCIC and you'll find us on there. Bye for now.
It's a difficult time for us all, so we're not actually going to make you wait a month for the next episode, as we feel the one that we've got coming up is pretty relevant to what's going on now. So we're dropping the next episode, and it's all about developing an income strategy, on Thursday, April 16th.